Hi, welcome to another edition of the PCRF Podcasts. My name is Dave Page, and I'm a paramedic instructor at Denver Hills Community College and a board member for the PCRF. I am very lucky here to be with...
Hi, I'm John Studnick, research director for the Carolinas Medical Center and the Mecklenburg EMS Agency.
So, it's pretty special to have you in the room this time because we keep reviewing your work, and so it's really fun to kind of not have to read what you wrote, but actually be able to ask you questions. And to start with, I think we'll start with the intraosseous project that you did. And we had recorded a podcast about it and had been left with some questions that I think will be really fun to be able to ask you in person. It's also really, I think, fun for our audience to be able to listen and participate in podcasts where people are actually doing the research, right? Instead of having, you know, sort of the armchair quarterback sitting there on Monday morning going, yeah, you know, I think that's a good project or that's not a good project. So congratulations. It's not every day that a paramedic is on a paper for an Annals of Emergency Medicine publication. And you have had many great successes, so this is just one of many. And it's also, I think, apt to point out that at this point, you're one of the most prolific paramedic researchers we have. Now, it's also special that you have a doctorate, but I'm not going to call you Dr. Studnick because I'd rather think of you as Paramedic Studnick. Okay. All right. Not that you don't deserve the doctor title. It's more just that you're one of us, man. Okay. So after that little diatribe that has nothing to do with IO, let's talk about IO. Intraosseous versus intravascular access during out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, a randomized controlled trial. It was published in December 2011. And if you want to refer back to the PCRF podcast, feel free to look on the same webpage for our sort of peanut gallery commentary. Tell us, though, now that we've had a chance to listen to that or at least discuss it, what do you think about this whole intraosseous during cardiac arrest?
Well, thanks, Dave. I think the intraosseous paper is a paper we're particularly proud of for a couple of different reasons. We had some really good investigators on this project. Two of the authors, including the lead author, was one of the EMS fellows at Carolinas Medical Center and Mecklenburg EMS while we were doing the project. And really, the genesis of this project came about while we were revamping our cardiac arrest protocols for MEDIC in Charlotte. And we had decided, or the medical director at the time had decided, that he wanted to move to IO access as the primary measure or as a primary intervention to gain vascular access during an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. And at that time, there were two routes. We could do a humoral IO or we could do a tibial IO. And so he had decided that the humoral IO sounded like a good idea. It's, you know, up in the shoulder, maybe it's a little closer to the heart, the drugs get there quicker, who knows. But he made in the protocol that we should prefer to start an IO in the shoulder first in our new cardiac arrest protocols. And so we implemented those protocols. And as time passed, and we see about 500 and some cardiac arrests a year in Charlotte. So over the course of 2 months, we started to hear from our paramedics that, you know, they're starting these humoral IOs, but they keep falling out, or they're having limited success with them, and they weren't really very happy. And so we hear that a lot from paramedics. We hear anecdotal evidence that, oh, something doesn't work, we don't like it. So what we decided to do was a little retrospective observational study to take a look at how our IO performance was happening. And what we found out was that after we implemented this protocol, our humoral success rate was lower than our tibial success rate. And the humoral insertion wasn't quite as good. So we did an observational study. We changed the protocol to ask people to start it in the tibia instead of the humerus, and we compared the two groups and did a little retrospective analysis that we published in Pre-Hospital Emergency Care the year before this study that said, you know, that it looked like tibial was better. The problem was, this wasn't a randomized controlled trial. It was a retrospective observational study. Paramedics could still choose their route, we thought
so. Huge selection bias.
So we had a pretty good amount of selection bias. So the results were compelling, but enough to compel us to say maybe we should do this as a randomized controlled trial. And so we wrote up a protocol where we would compare a three-arm study where we did tibial insertion, IV access, and humeral insertion. And paramedics actually randomized patients to one of the arms to eliminate that bias that we found or that was potentially in that first observational study. And so I think this is a really good example of paramedics identifying something that might be a problem in the system, talking to their available staff, the fellows, myself, and then us taking a look at the data to try to confirm, is this anecdotal experience true or not? And if it is, can we further investigate it using more rigorous methods, such as this randomized controlled trial, to really try to prove or disprove what we're seeing in the field?
Exactly, and be more intentional about the data you're collecting and about how to analyze it so that we can really figure out the question instead of just constantly looking back at stuff and going, it's imperfect, we have not enough data. So great, good job. That's excellent.
Thank you. Yeah. So in the end, and as the results had indicated that you spoke about in your last podcast, the tibial IO seemed to outperform the humeral IO when you looked at initial insertion success, and then when you looked at maintenance of insertion during a cardiac arrest. We had many more dislodgements in the humeral IO group than we did in the tibial IO group. And then surprisingly, our performance in peripheral vascular access using just a regular IV, which they were asked to start in the AC, not an EJ or not in the hand. We asked them to try to find something nice up in the arm. Was surprisingly low.
Yeah, I was actually really surprised by that, and it made me think, how many times do I miss when I first start an IV that maybe I think I'm better than what I actually am?
And really, this was the whole impetus for changing the protocol is that. We looked back and we said the IO, is a relatively easier access point. It's a drill right into the tibial bone, and it goes right in. You don't have to search for an IV. You don't have to search for a vein. The veins don't lay down in it's a no flow state. Maybe you can't find one. You just find your landmarks and drill, and there it goes. I was surprised that it was as low as it was, but we shouldn't really be shocked by it. It's a cardiac arrest. These guys don't have veins standing
great
out
veins,
so
right,
we can,
right,
you know,
right.
See, and it's an older population typically, which, we always have some problems with there too.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about, because there's this conflicting information that we're making sense of from the San Antonio group. And in their paper, they sort of wanted to cast maybe a stone of doubt, a shadow of doubt on this whole humeral piece because of the size of the needle. What size needles were you using when you were doing the humeral IO? Were they the regular size or the longer?
So we had the all sizes available to us during the study. And it was at paramedic discretion what needle size to use. So if they were randomized to humeral site and they had a, for example, 75-year-old woman who was frail and didn't have much mass around her upper arm, they could choose to use the normal needle or the long needle. And then if we had somebody that was, bigger, they'd choose the longer needle. So we did actually track needle size. We didn't present it in the paper because there was no
difference.
It didn't make an impact. It looks like they used needle size appropriately. The biggest issue we had with the body mass problem is that weights aren't consistently recorded, and when they are recorded, EMS professionals are woefully inadequate at estimating an individual's weight.
Yeah.
And especially, where is that weight carried? I mean, is it carried in the upper arms, or is it carried around the waist, or
right,
you know,
right.
So it would be great to have, you know, real weights on patients, but it wasn't something that we had available to us. Though we felt that we had the appropriate materials available, the longer IO needles, and that they were used, you know, at the discretion of the paramedic, which is the protocol. I don't think it would be appropriate to write a protocol that says every humeral access needs the longest needle. Because I don't know that that's necessarily the truth.
Yeah.
I think there has to be some bit of clinical decision making on the part of the paramedic.
Yeah, good point. And so in one of the papers in the discussion section, the discussion centers around the fact that during a cardiac arrest, this is an area, our shoulders are an area where we're moving around, we're doing work. You know, people move arms during cardiac arrest, you're doing compressions near those humeral IVs. Do you get a sense that some of those dislodgements were just simply because people are just working the cardiac arrest?
Yeah, we had really good anecdotal evidence. But we had the anecdotal evidence from the paramedics when we debriefed them after calls, when they had a dislodgement. Now, we didn't have a formal data collection tool. It was just a generalized conversation, which is why, you know, we didn't put this in a randomized controlled trial article. But we had good conversations with our paramedics. And the consensus was that the upper torso area is just really very busy. You have people switching compressions in and out. You have someone at the head ventilating. Typically, the person with the monitor is up near the head, because that's kind of the, you know, if you think about a cardiac arrest, that's the power position where you're standing and you can oversee from head to toe what's going on in the cardiac arrest. So there's a lot of people up there. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you just think about, you know, normal practice, IV lines get tangled all the time.
Yeah, and so they get yanked.
If they're tangled up where all the action is taking place, it just makes sense that there would be more dislodgements because they're getting moved around. And when you move it down to the tibia, there's not a lot of action down there.
Yeah.
And so it's a little safer location, I think, for the access to be, because you have a less of a risk that somebody is going to move the leg, right?
Right.
There's a pretty high chance or high probability that you're going to be moving the shoulders and arms around you know, in that area, but not so much around the leg.
About the only time that I can think of that I start to worry about that dislodging the tibial IO is when we put the patient on the stretcher. And even the straps line up kind of nicely, because one is above the knee and the other one's lower. So it sits right in the middle. It's just that I've had to change my thought process around where I throw the monitor in the middle of the cardiac arrest. Because it usually ended up by the legs. You know, you package the patient all up. Now the monitor needs to stay somewhere else, because if you throw something on top there, you're going to lose the IO. But in the context of shoulders and arms, it was a constant sort of, don't pull out the IV, don't pull out the IV. Well, if the arm gets moved in one direction or another, that shoulder is moving, and who knows what happens to the humeral IO. Excellent. And I did want to sort of bring up that whole point about speed of delivery of the drug, and the fact that that's really, though it's discussed in some of these papers, there's no clinical evidence and no studies showing that delivery of medication through an IO in the humerus is faster or slower than giving it in the tibia.
You know, I think they're starting to develop some pig models these days where they're doing some bench testing and laboratory testing to determine flow rates for humoral versus tibial approximation placement. The problem is it's really hard to translate those pig models into a human model. Because, you know, pigs are clearly not humans. trying to determine, you know, that kind of flow rate and flow state in a human model, I think is relatively difficult. I'm sure at some point in time, someone will come up with a decent way to measure it. But really, that it's relatively in the realm of anecdote, and it makes sense. But, you know, with a high rate of dislodgement, what are you gaining by having it up by the humeral, up in the humerus? If if there's a probability that you're going to lose your line, would you rather sacrifice a little bit of time and have it in the tibia, or, you know, maybe not be able to infuse medication at all, or have an unknown dislodgement and being infusing it into, you know, soft mm-hmm. tissue, which would not be good either. So, I mean, I think it's a risk benefit that individual medical directors have to take into consideration when they're developing their protocols. And hopefully, you know, this paper and the papers published out of San Antonio can provide some measure of information to help make the decision that they're most comfortable with.
Yeah, I know local medical directors have been pretty hesitant just in terms of the difficulty of the humeral site being just, it's harder to, they feel it's harder to landmark and it's harder to actually do correctly. And
I think one thing that's important to, you know, talk about, at least locally, so, you know, this study occurred in one system. It didn't occur in, you know, it wasn't a multi-center study. So obviously it'd be interesting to see results from a multi-system study would give more credence to the results we found. But in terms of, you know, practice change for us in Charlotte, the tibial location is the preferred site, but the humeral location is still an acceptable site. If the, you know, patient is contraindicated for tibial, or there's a tibial dislodgement, or the tibial access isn't available, the humeral site is still a secondary alternative. So, you know, the results of our study, the way we interpret them was, if you want to have quick vascular access with a low rate of dislodgements, you should have your first attempt be in the tibia. But the humeral site is, you know, it's a backup site.
Yeah,
so
you
it's
like
no,
it. Yeah.
You know, we're not saying that you shouldn't use the humeral site.
Yeah.
It's just you need to make that decision, what's important at that time for your patient.
That's really an interesting point because I think some medical directors have interpreted these studies as a total condemnation of that site and just, you know, forget it, don't even use it. And when you've tried two tibial sites or dislodged one after you've had it, you're up a creek. You're done. That's it. We're you can start looking for an IV, which may be a better site anyway. Who knows? But the idea that it's an option is needs to still be discussed. And listeners should be aware that at NAEMSP. This year at the EMS physician meeting, an abstract got presented by the same San Antonio group that's been doing this IO work, and cleverly, I think, needs to be said, funded by VitaCare, the makers of the EZ-IO, but still ethically fairly clean on swine, a pig study that showed you can dump fluid fairly nicely into IOs and that works, at least in pigs. So IO is here to stay. IO seems to be a quick, fast route for cardiac arrest, at least reliably in the tibia for sure. And I think we can take away from this that we need to, as always, do more studies, but gosh, this was, you know, the best attempt I've yet seen in terms of a randomized controlled study that looks at things prospectively to try and determine which is the better one.
Yeah, a couple of more just final thoughts about that study. I think it's really important to highlight the fact that, you know, this was a randomized controlled trial done in an EMS system where the paramedics and the administration in that EMS system really bought into the concept of doing a trial to try to prove or disprove whether or not their current clinical practice was their best model. And they really did an outstanding job of following protocol, understanding why we're randomizing patients, and buying into the protocol, which is really good. And I think speaks very highly of paramedics and their ability to be involved and active participants in research. And that, you know, if you're out there in a system that sees, you know, a fair number of cardiac arrests or similar types of patients, you shouldn't be afraid to think about, can we do a trial? Can we randomize patients? The answer is probably yes, if you can convince your paramedics that it's a important study, if you can convince them that there's a need to participate and get them to do some of the work for you, and I think you'll be really successful. So I think this type of study, for me, really makes me proud to be an EMS provider, be a paramedic, and work with a group and work with an organization that's dedicated to doing this type of work. And so in the end, I'd really like to thank the, you know, the paramedics and the EMTs in Mecklenburg County in Charlotte for all the work they did on this project. It was a great project, and they did a really good job.
That's a great way to end this podcast. And again, just applauding the group of providers who were willing to undertake this and make the effort. I'm sort of hoping to see more in the future. I can't wait for you to do this and tie it to outcomes. And who knows, maybe IOs and drugs and cardiac arrest don't matter anyway. So who cares if we can give drugs really quick? Because at the end, that's not what matters for cardiac arrest. So, again, just congratulations on a good study.
Thanks a lot, Dave. I really appreciate it.